I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freund, and this is The Next Page. Hello, Miss Marissa.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going terrific. How about with you?
Pretty good. It's been a beautiful week. I know I like to give the weather report.
So right.
I will just say that so far, today's a little cool, but the last few days have been beautiful and have given me an opportunity to start cleaning up the yard. And I just love how green everything is getting. And I just have to say, like, shout out to the groundhog. What's his name? Phil. Because this year he did predict a early spring, and that's what we've got going on right now.
Good. Yeah, I was driving to Auburn today, and as I started driving down through the valley south of the city, it was so cool to see what would have been just brown wood starting to turn green. You know, the trees just have this beautiful light,
I know,
pale green. So it's exciting.
I know. It's the little things, right?
Yes. You know, and I love just the bulbs that are up and anything. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Can't wait. For the water to warm up a little bit, because for my fishing, it's still kind of cold. I went fishing a couple times and the water was just so cold that nothing was biting.
Yeah.
But it's right around the corner.
Not too far.
And today we are at part three of what does it take to be a great leader? So I think this one, when I first sent you this, were you surprised by the 2 points that I talked about? Or actually, I probably talked about it last week.
Yeah, you mentioned it last week, and I don't think I was surprised. You gave me the teaser that you know, those were the two words without giving me an explanation, but it makes sense to me. It really does.
Yeah. So for those that maybe didn't hear last week or didn't read the post that came out this morning, the two other qualities that we're looking for to really take our leadership to another level, the first one is teachability, and the second is humility. And they really go hand in hand. They're like a cup and saucer. And what I really loved was legendary coach John Wooden said, it's what you learn after you know it all that counts. And that really struck me the first time I read it, you know, to think about the fact that I think it goes into, like, you know, we're programmed. So we go to school, we graduate, we go to college, we graduate, and then we think our learning's done and we're finally ready to engage in our career. No, you're ready to start learning your career. You have the foundation piece. And one of the notes that I put in here was, you know, had I known at 40 what I know now, or if I was able at 40 to realize the truths of the law of the lid, my career could have been completely different. The problem was, at 40, I wasn't ready to listen to that truth. And it's one of those, it's like the parable says, you know, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. I wasn't teachable when I was 40, which is tragic, because I could have really saved myself a whole bunch of heartache if I would have just realized, you know what, you don't know it all. I thought I was so smart when I really wasn't. And great leadership only comes when a person is truly teachable. And Marshall Goldsmith said it best when he said, "What got you here won't get you there." You've got to really apply yourself to continually looking for ways to increase your teachability. And there were a couple notes that I found here on this. John Maxwell, in his book, The 21 Qualities of a Leader, says, you need to learn in your area of strength. And I want to touch on that, because I have in the past in the podcast, but whenever I work with coaching clients or whenever I'm teaching a class, I always tell people, I don't want you to work on your weaknesses, unless it's a character issue, which is choice. So you have to choose to be a person of character. But if we work on our weaknesses, at best, we're going to be average. So we really need to be developing our strength, in our area of strength. Well, somebody would say, well, if I'm already an expert or really good at that, why should I keep learning? No, that's exactly what you need to keep doing. And John would say, read 6 to 12 books a year on leadership or your field of specialization. And his reason is, he says, if you're already an expert, this prevents you from becoming jaded and unteachable. And I just, man, that hit me again. Now, you know, and our listeners know that I do do a book a month. Mm-hmm. And my reason for doing it is it really does keep you from thinking you know it all. Because you see different twists on things. You learn different things about different aspects of things. So I really encourage people, part of your growth plan really needs to be either reading or listening to a book at least every other month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that still might be hard for folks, but the reality is that probably most business-related books aren't going to be more than 6 to 8 hours long if you're listening, if you're doing mm-hmm. an audio. And the average commute is 30 minutes each way to and from work. So if we're looking at that, we're talking about less than 2 weeks of drive time
mm-hmm.
to cover a book. So you could say, come on, I'm saying you can do one every other month.
Yeah, I mean, when I first read this too, I feel like this, you know, people are currently more teachable than ever, especially the younger generations, the millennials.
Yes.
I think because we are in a more, I don't want to say education focused, but learning focused culture.
Okay, good.
There's so many ways to learn. You mentioned, you can be reading these books, you can be listening to them on audio, you can be reading them as a book or as an ebook on your Kindle. Podcasts. There are some like really long podcasts too that get very in depth.
Yes,
I think now more than ever, people are taking advantage of things that they can learn online. There's lots of, you know, Skillshare, Lynda.com, the larger learning systems that companies own. There's a lot right. of ways, and I think people are taking more advantage now than ever. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And in keeping with what you said, what Rachel Hollis said one time when I heard her speak live, she said, in a time when there's so much free information,
mm-hmm.
your ignorance is a personal choice.
Yes. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
And as leaders, so yes, I will tell you that I think people are taking advantage of learning in many more ways than normal,
mm-hmm.
or than not normal, than in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you this, that and I was thinking about it as I was driving to one of our member companies this morning. I still know so many, I hate to call them leaders, managers,
mm-hmm.
who think they know it all and don't think they need to learn anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the tragedy, because they're going to be left behind. They're going to be, you know, that either they're, well, and the sad part is, for instance, if they, let's say they own the company,
right?
Their companies are being left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be relegated to a point in history or a footnote in, you know, in a newspaper someday,
mm-hmm.
because they can't, they aren't aware of what's really happening. Another great tool to know if you're teachable is to look at how you react to mistakes. So, you know, we're talking about some long podcasts. I finished one today that was over 50 minutes, but it was good because I had like a 35-minute ride or 40-minute ride each way back and forth to Auburn. But in the point of part of this podcast was, you know, how do you react to failure? And how do you react to issues coming up in your organization? Do you blame people? Do you, you know, and one that I thought was pretty interesting was, okay, so we had this economic issue because there was a downturn in the economy. That's an excuse. And unfortunately, that was an excuse that I had used for many, many years. And the speaker of the podcast said, why didn't you catch it? Why didn't you adjust? And what he was sharing was that he was traveling with the owner of his organization, and they were looking at some reports, and one of the business unit managers, if I can call it that, had really let some numbers slip. And so the owner of all the corporations said to his CEO, man, look at what so-and-so did. And the CEO stopped him and said, no, why did I allow him to do that? So that CEO was saying, as the leader, I own that mistake. So now I have to learn from the fact that that mistake occurred and adjust. You know, maybe I don't give that person as much authority. Maybe that person needs some training. But he was saying that a failure within his organization was his fault, not the person that made it. So, and then the other co-host said, yeah, so I guess the thing would be if when we fail, do we get super frustrated and look to blame, or do we look to take ownership?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a piece that means I'm teachable. So if I'm looking to take ownership and learn from my failure, I continue to be teachable. And I never thought of it that way. I always thought, well, yeah, you know, as a leader, you just own up to it. Nope. Am I learning from it? So how I react to mistakes is an indication as whether or not I'm still teachable, which to me was a pretty pretty interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then trying something new, you know, are we willing to try something new? Marissa, have there been things that in the last, let's say, couple years of your life you've tried that you've never done before?
Well, became a mom.
You became a mom twice.
Twice, yes, in the last few years. I mean, a lot of things that I do in my position at MACNE, I've taught myself. I mean, you touched on this a little bit when we started. I think it's silly to think that, oh, well, because I graduated from college with a degree in marketing, that I'm all set for my role as the communications manager at MACNE. You know, I think school teaches you how to learn, and then it becomes our responsibility to exercise that muscle.
Very good. Yeah.
For the rest of our lives. Yep. And sure. Because it's not like we come out of school like little robots that can just perform our duties for our careers. I think you inevitably are going to have to teach yourself things, or, you know, do further education. And so I think a lot of the things that I do for MACNE, I've like, as you like to say, grown my wings on the way down. And
yes.
And it makes it that much more satisfying when you complete projects, or
exactly,
you know, realize your results, to say, yeah, like, oh, I taught myself that from, yep, the, you know, from the ground up, here I, yeah, am.
Well, our podcast.
Yeah.
You know, we have our second anniversary coming up. We have our 100th episode coming,
mm-hmm,
up very soon.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know how to do this.
Nope.
Some that listen may think we still don't know how
to do it.
We're
still figuring it out.
We're still figuring it out.
Yeah.
You know, and what they don't hear is you and I checking each other. Okay, do we see the light on the mic? Do we this? And it's because we made mistakes.
Yeah.
And we learned. And the key thing is, if you want to be teachable, just keep trying something new. And it helps us cultivate a beginner's mindset,
mm-hmm,
which I think is huge.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to humility.
Yeah.
I've said it goes hand in hand with teachability. I think unless we're humble as leaders, we'll never be teachable, and we really can't lead, because nobody wants to follow a know-it-all.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't. And when I think of the organizations where I'm saying that the people aren't learning, that's because they're not humble. And they think that they know it all, and they think that everybody else is wrong. One of the things that I found interesting in one of the articles that I found on this talked about some leaders that were humble and some that weren't. And one of the leaders that they identified as being very humble was Alan Mulally. Now, Alan left Boeing to go to Ford. Ford was a mess. Alan turned Ford around. Alan retired. Ford became a mess again. Because he was a very down-to-earth kind of leader that wanted to know what other people thought, and then he would make his decision after they had all shared their views. And I think that's really key. I think one of the problems that if we're not humble as leaders is that we will make excuses to justify our behaviors, and that just robs us of learnings. We really stifle the creativity in others, you know, because you've got to be able to look at others as having some power or some value to become a good leader. So, you know, are we, if we're humble, we're going to be promoting and acknowledging other people. We're going to be looking at our teams and saying, wow, they're really, really good at this. How can I help leverage them to be even better? Mm-hmm. And the humility of the leader really acts as like an encouragement and a support and a guidance for the team, so that the team realizes, wow, this person's behind us and they really want us to excel. One of the things that I wanted to touch on, and I didn't put this, Marissa, in any of the notes that I shared with you, is to try to figure out what humility is not. And sometimes we think of people that are humble as, well, they just don't stand out in a crowd. And that's not what humility is. I think humility is realizing who we really are and who we aren't, and our humanity and our mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the way John Maxwell put it once. Now John is a person of faith. And so somebody one time asked him, he says, well, you know, how do you maintain a humble mindset when you're so gifted? You know, that, you know, he's an amazing speaker. He's an expert on leadership. He was just named a Horatio Alger Award winner for 2019. And he just said, oh, you touched on it when you said, I'm so gifted. He said, I've been given gifts by God. And he said, me exercising those gifts is me taking advantage of what I was given. He goes, it's not me. I didn't generate those gifts. They were given to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's my responsibility to use them. So some people might say, well, he's proud because he says he's gifted in these areas. He's not proud. He's acknowledging it's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
It's a talent that he has been given. You know, and I think that is a key, that if somebody is really good at what they do, they need to exercise that gift. If you're working on a team and you really have an aptitude for something, you need to step up and say, I'd like to do that because I'm, you know, I think that that's a strength area for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem is when people mistake not speaking up about their giftedness as humility, they rob the organization. So I don't want people to think that humble leaders don't acknowledge their strengths. They do. But they acknowledge the strengths of others and they acknowledge their own weaknesses. I think humility helps you be collaborative. And I'm looking down at the notes that I had sent you. It helps with integrity. It really helps us appreciate people. You know, if I'm humble, I realize what other people bring into my life.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not humble, I'm destined to fail, and nobody, and so the people will sense that I don't need them, so they won't try to help.
Well, I think it adds a layer of realness too.
Yes.
You know, you become more approachable. People
right.
are more likely to be honest with you about,
yes.
about all kinds of things, whether it be,
right.
you know, what's going on in the workplace, or maybe some blind spots you may have that they're noticing. They're more likely to give you honest feedback if you're having a conversation like that or doing
right.
360. It definitely adds a layer to that and a level of trust.
Exactly. And what I love about what you're saying is when that realness comes, because they realize that you're just like, Your team realizes that you have failures just like they do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're more apt to admit when they need help, your direct reports, because you've asked
mm-hmm.
for help. I made a note here because yesterday I spent all day, well, I've spent 2 days in a row doing 360s, but yesterday's 360 was on one specific individual who is a superintendent in a school district who's only been in his position 2-3 years. And it was one of the most amazing experiences. I mean, I've done a lot of 360s. I've never done one that was so inspirational to me. And this leader is so amazing that I think there were four union groups that are within the district. All of them had their presidents sitting with me, you know, for this one-on-one 360. Teachers, administrators, maintenance people, bus drivers. And, you know, I met with a total of 18 people throughout the day. Every single person praised this individual for his authenticity, if I can call it that.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that and what was neat was when I suggested this, which is unheard of in his type of an industry, from what I've gathered, because every spring school boards have to do an assessment of a superintendent. And so there's all kinds of forms that different organizations, you know, New York State School Boards Association has forms that they send out. And I threw out the idea of a 360. And as soon as I said it, this leader said, absolutely, we got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, really? Because he says, no, I want to do it. And then he said to me, I can't wait to hear the feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's looking for constructive criticism. He's looking for, how can I get better at what I do? And because of that mindset, every single person that came in was praising him. I mean, I got scores in that 360. I don't know if I've ever gotten scores consistently that high in any 360 I've ever done.
Wow.
And it's really, and it's all because this individual is humble, recognizes his strengths, knows his weaknesses, and solicits feedback from people on a regular basis. He treats it as a gift that he can act on. And the funny part was, yesterday morning, before I even got there, he emailed me, hey, are you going to be able to give me some updates before the end of the day, or do I need to wait till you complete the report? You know, and I just said, well, if you're in your office when I'm done, I'll give you some feedback. Now, he wasn't, so he's going to have to wait. I told him he can call me, but he hasn't yet. Mm-hmm. But that's the type of leader that leads an excellent organization. It's the humility piece. You know, so they're curious. They always want to keep learning. They're authentic. This guy will own up to his mistakes. And just to give you some examples that might help people understand. So they had rolled out a strategic plan. When it got rolled out to the public, if I understand the details right, it wasn't exactly what had been presented to the staff. And he saw the difference. And he stopped the meeting and said, wait a minute, we got to stop here. This isn't what I rolled out to my teachers. Let's revisit this next month. I may have the timing wrong. But he realized, well, there's a mistake here. Got to fix it. Can't go for it. Can't push it through. Gives credit to other people. There was another one where one of the things that he's going to have to work on is a lot of times he gets so passionate, so excited, he promises things that he hasn't figured out yet how he can deliver.
Mm-hmm.
And he made one of those promises. And then this person said to me, but you know what he did? He came for a meeting he asked for a meeting with my people, and he stood up and said, I'm sorry, I screwed up. I can't do this right now. But he owns his mistakes. And I had people saying to me they have never, ever worked for a leader that good.
Wow.
So the key, you know, I'm talking to my wife about, you know, as I'm entering all of these statements into my report, and I'm like, this is amazing. And she even said, it must be really great,
mm-hmm.
you know, as the person doing the 360 to hear this kind of feedback and exciting. I said, it's amazing. It's just super. So leaders can do it, but they have to be teachable and they have to be humble.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, I think as we look at the past, we would think that strong leaders had to be like dictators. No. They have to lead, not drive. Because that's the difference. Wow, I landed that plane pretty quick, didn't I?
No, it's all good stuff. And now I'm left wondering what we'll be talking about next week.
Oh, so we're gonna finish our what it takes to be a great leader. And I'm going to talk about a topic that is sometimes misunderstood and people don't really know what I mean, but it basically is adding value to people.
Great. So that'll be the final installment into our series?
That's the final installment into this series, which then sets us up for our 100th episode, right? Because next week would be 99, right?
Yes.
Am I right in my numbers? Yes.
Yes.
So then we have our 100th, and our 100th is we need some questions from people.
Yes.
Anything they'd like us to answer, they got to ask us the questions. And I'm really going to see if I can get Engineer Tim to at least give us a few minutes of some bloopers. The easy one was me last week not remembering how to say my name. So anything special upcoming in the Norcross family?
No, I'm not really. We're celebrating another birthday. Well, two birthdays this weekend and just doing spring things and getting outside.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. How about you?
Well, we're going to go out of town quickly. My wife and I and Tim just to visit some friends in a church up in Canada. But my parents come home tomorrow from Florida.
Oh, great.
So that's
wonderful.
That's always exciting that they can come home, and now they'll spend the summer months with this part of their family and this group of grandkids and great grandkids and so on. So, but it's great. The weather's turning, things are getting green, and that's always just a great time of year.
Yes, it
if
is.
If only the lakes would warm up a little bit so my bass would start biting. It'll come. All right. So again, I want to remind people, please send us questions. Please go to iTunes and give us a review. Make sure you subscribe so that you don't miss any of the episodes. And with that, I'm Dave Freund.
I'm Marissa Norcross.
And this was The Next Page.